Welcome to Holden Village Media Ministry. This is a forum entitled Worship and Community. Today's date is Tuesday, June 9th, 1998. The call number on this tape is FO98-2. Let's listen in.
And begin this evening's forum. Welcome, everyone. My name is Mark Schwain, and this is the second of this summer's forums. We plan to have one a week each of the first 3 weeks, and then have two a week every week after that. And for those of you for whom this is the first forum, I should say that forums at Holden are a long-standing tradition. And this summer, we envisioned them as really conversations, not so much debates, though there will certainly be differences of opinion. And we think that any healthy community ought to be able to not just tolerate, but even foster good differences of opinion. But the aim of these is not so much to define positions as much as it is to try to move into a deeper understanding of whatever issue it is that we're discussing, so that ideally, in a very good form, everybody leaves with some new thoughts and maybe even some practical help. This particular topic emerged, as I hope all of them do, from conversation in the village. That is, folks had seen me and said, we'd really like to talk at some point in a forum, if possible, about worship and community. And indeed, the little narrative, which I'll read here again, because we always are going to start with little narrative, little case studies, and then have some folks representing the various characters in the case study talk to give these things a little concrete focus, these broad subjects like worship and community. So this narrative was really borrowed in part from their own story, and I'm going to read that and then call upon the folks who are here from the staff who are going to play roles as those roles are described in the story to get us started. And I should say at the beginning that the views expressed by the individuals who are playing in these roles may or may not be their own personal views. So they have been encouraged to represent these views, but then to elaborate upon them or expand them or qualify them as they see fit, because the point is for them to kind of get us started, and then after that for the conversation to belong to the whole village. So here's the narrative. St. Johann Sebastian Lutheran Church is falling apart. Several families are leaving the church over the issue of worship. These families want more and more contemporary hymns, music, and liturgical styles. They find the steady diet of the LBW boring and often difficult for new members to sing. They think that much of the classical music the choir sings sounds dreary. Indeed, it sounds like every church service is a funeral service. After church each Sunday, these families feel like asking, who died? Pastor Singer, who's here this evening, second from my left, has an answer for this question. Jesus died, he says, and we gather here to worship him every Sunday in a liturgical tradition we have been working for centuries to develop, one that binds us to the community of Christians living and dead. My job is to initiate all members into the LBW so they can sing wherever they go within the Lutheran Church. Sure, our music is difficult at first, but we need to worship God with the best that is in us, and anything worth doing well is often difficult at first. The chair of the worship committee, who is here second from my right, Eric Deal, wants to please everyone. He proposes that every Sunday there should be an 8:30 traditional service and a 10:45 contemporary service. But the director of church music, Mark Baton, to my immediate right, is opposed to the worship committee. He loves all kinds of music, but he says, quote, worship should unite and deepen community, not divide it into early and late worshipers. I will not have worship be just another item on Americans' consumerist menus. I am for blending different styles of worship into all the services. Can we save St. Johann Sebastian? We'll begin this evening's forum by hearing from one of their most troubled and confused members, Mrs. Jane Doleful. Jane, please start us off.
And I am troubled. I am truly troubled. Most of the families who left Johann Sebastian are good friends of mine and my husband's. Many of them are Holden people, people who have been to Holden with us at other times, as our church, several of us families have come out. For me, I appreciate the LBW, and I appreciate Marty Hagen's liturgy, and I appreciate other liturgies. I love the way we do worship at Holden. I wish that we could do the same kind of worship in my church. I appreciate the classical music that our choir director chooses, and I also appreciate the contemporary music that we sing. I've sung in the choir at Johann Sebastian for 22 years. Ever since I joined the church, so has my husband. I believe we should offer a variety of music as we find here at Holden in a blended way. But to me, there's a different issue here as well. Who are we called to be as a church? To me, the church should be about including, not excluding, about welcoming, about building up, not tearing down. Our friends who have left have felt very hurt by the way that the pastor treated them. They felt excluded and unheard when they talked to him about their concerns for a greater variety of music and some of the praise music that they love so much. They also say that they felt judged by him and that he almost had a holier-than-thou attitude, like, I know what's right, and my idea is right, and yours is wrong. You don't know as much about this as I do. So they really felt hurt. They did not feel welcomed at all. For me, personally, I'm hurt for them, my friends who have left. I am disappointed in my pastor. I'm discouraged about Johann Sebastian Church. It seems as though since this has been going on, and this has been 2 or 3 years that this has been going on and still not resolved, the feeling of spirit and joy in our church has diminished and feels nearly gone at this point, and it was there. Before all of this happened. I'm feeling very tired of trying to continue to support the church and yet not feel all that nurtured myself. And what is God calling me to? What is God calling me and my husband to? To stay at Johann Sebastian or to leave? As I said, we've been there 22 years. We have not felt called to any other church. We have felt called to support Johann Sebastian by many leadership ways that we do in the church. We know that the church is more than the pastor. In fact, the church is not the pastor at all. The church is the body here together. But can I feel at home in a church that I feel seems not inclusive and not welcoming? That's my dilemma. That's my question.
Well, thank you, Jane. That is indeed a somewhat doleful story. You your name. And someone who we think may also live up to his name. Someone very much, looked very much like Pastor Singer, sung beautifully for us at Pastor's. We should give thanks for that. But Pastor Singer, we've heard a little bit about your views here regarding worship, and we're wondering if you could put in your own words your sense of what should go on at Johann Sebastian and what you're trying to do there.
Well, it's a happy accident of history that Lutherans are very distinctive. They have a fantastic musical tradition. Martin Luther was a wonderful musician himself, and he appreciated the great music that was going on around him. We have to remember that Martin Luther did not want to break away from the Roman Catholic Church, and it wasn't the music that he was trying to reform. He loved the great composers of Rome. He loved particularly Josquin des Prez, who was widely regarded as the greatest composer of his time, maybe one of the greatest composers in the history of Western music. He said of Josquin, other composers get told what to do by the notes, and Josquin tells the notes what to do. Mm-hmm. And Martin Luther had a very highly developed, refined sense of music. And somehow that has come down to us in the preservation of a sense of greatness, a calling to great art and great music in our church, which a lot of the other Protestant churches don't necessarily share. It happens that another accident of history, maybe not so happy, but certainly inescapable, is that the Lutherans that came to America when they immigrated were from Germany, North Germany, because that was the Lutheran part of Germany, and from Scandinavia. That's where Lutherans live. So we started out as a fairly cohesive, homogeneous group of people who shared certain cultural attributes and qualities. And some of that can go a little bit far. I know my great-great-grandfather, who was Norwegian, refused to baptize children in anything but with anything but Norwegian names. He really believed that the Bible was written in Norwegian. It was really awful. And we have that. That is the dark side of being a Lutheran, for sure. But that's not all bad. I mean, there is something good to be said for our solid sense of tradition, that we come from a long, unbroken line of people who are proud of who they are and of what they do, and they know they're different from the other more wishy-washy Protestant denominations who just sort of grab from here and there and say, oh, thank you, Jesus, thank you, Jesus. We say thank you, Jesus, in a much more artistic way. It's a good thing to be a Lutheran. It happens that in North Germany and in Scandinavia, there was a tradition that grew up, particularly in the 19th century, early 19th century, about the time that most Lutherans immigrated to the United States. That tradition was of community singing, and it happened to be a very high level of community singing, choral singing. Some of it was sponsored by the church, and some of it was sponsored by the secular community. In Germany, it was called the Liedertafel tradition. In Scandinavia, I don't know what the name of the tradition was, but in Norway and Sweden, they have wonderful community choruses. It happens as well that our background, as opposed to the people south of us in Europe, recognize the contributions of women to church music. We thought that women should be able to sing in choirs, and so we didn't just have little boys being hit on the hands with rulers to make them sing like women. We had women singing, and it's a very great tradition that we brought to this country with us, so that when all those Norwegians and Lutherans and Germans moved to Minnesota and the Dakotas and Wisconsin and Iowa, they brought that tradition with them. They were very musically literate people. They're proud of their tradition. They founded colleges, and one of the most important things in their colleges was the choral music program. And I mean, we may not like this nowadays, this may no longer be politically correct, but that's where Lutherans come from. And that's what we were proud of having. And we have publishing houses that published wonderful music and that supported good composers and arrangers, and it goes on to this day. And I hate what I see happening to our musical tradition. And I have to say that I see Baptists creeping into our tradition. I see Methodists and all the sort of things that they bring with them. A lack of erudition. They don't know what music is about. They say, da 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 da. And we know Bach was a Lutheran, for heaven's sake. We had one of the greatest composers in all history writing music, sacred music for the Lutheran Church. We have this as part of our tradition. Now, there is more than Bach, that's for sure, but he sets a standard that we should be following, and that many, many fine composers in the Lutheran tradition have followed. You have only to look at everything that says Augsburg Publishing House or Concordia Publishing House on it to know the kind of background that we have as Lutherans. And when I hear this other stuff starting to come into the church, I think, well, are we Lutherans or are we just becoming some ur-religion, you know? I mean, the fact is, if we're letting other people into our church, that doesn't mean we have to dip down to their level. I believe that faith. Come on, give me a break. I'm doing my best. If those people want to be Lutherans and we want to be inclusive and we want to let them in, but the fact is, to be a Lutheran means that we worship on a high level. That we have a tradition of giving our very best to God. Johann Sebastian Bach put on his manuscripts, to the glory of God alone. And that is the sort of tradition. We believe that people should give their very best to God. Not just say, here I am, a musical illiterate, but God loves me. He forgives everybody their faults. That doesn't work anymore. We want to give our very best as far as architecture and art and music and all of the other things that go into worship. This is what makes Lutherans special. This is what sets us apart. I really decry what I see happening to us with since all these mergers have happened. And all this, what it's doing is it's just bringing in a least common denominator quality to our life as a church. It's pulling us down. When Martin Luther decided to develop a distinctive Lutheran music, yes, he did have to bring in popular music of the time. He had to invite young composers who weren't necessarily the greatest composers to write stuff. But then he took those popular songs and those other melodies and he lifted them to the level that he perceived as the level that God wanted. Now we are adopting popular styles, popular sounds, popular vocabulary, and we're just dropping down to the level of the popular music. I feel that this is very disturbing, and I wonder where the Lutheran Church is going. Probably to hell in a handbasket, as far as I can tell. Well, Pastor, Baptists.
Pastor, we know that pastors like to give sermons, and this one.
I'm done.
We will hear more from you, but we've come, I think, to realize the dilemma of the chair of the worship committee who's caught in these. So we're eager to hear from the chair of the worship committee, Mr. Eric Diehl, and see what in the world have you suggested, given these strong views here.
Well, we certainly don't want to deprive the Lutheran Church of its artistic heritage by any means. When this issue originally surfaced as a result of the families being dissatisfied with the worship, we looked at it. We looked at it as a basic matter. The more we looked at it, we thought we might want to start looking around at some other congregations. Certainly this has happened before. Well, we found some local congregations that had indeed gone through the similar conflict, and it quickly became a question of mission for us. We discovered that worship does a number of things for us. We talked about it as a connecting to our tradition, to our heritage, and a deepening of our own community. Well, it's more than that, too. It also enlarges our community. Worship is probably the first thing that those who currently are not involved with the church are going to come in and experience in our congregation. It's going to be the first thing that they have to do with us. And, well, I think we all agree on the committee with Pastor Singer. We want to offer him the best we've got. Well, we've suggested as a result one option. That would be to offer a traditional service that would provide the heritage and the rich music of Johann Sebastian Bach to all of those who come and yearn for that kind of connection. Well, there's another thing we can also offer. We can offer a later service, a contemporary service, that will address the liturgical and spiritual needs of people coming who want something maybe a little more, well, I hate to say it, but maybe a little more up-to-date, perhaps. Something that wasn't written in the 18th century. So that's been our proposal. And let me say, none of us believes in watering down the liturgy or treating it even as something that you go pick up, like you pick something up at the Five and Dime. We do look at it, though, as something that should bring us together. And for that reason, there's one other option that we discussed. That would be one that we learned from a local congregation. We've also considered the possibility of rotating liturgies. So we could use a number of different services and then just put them on, say, a monthly rotation. And so once a month we have the LBW, once a month we have now the feast, once a month we have something else. Those have been our proposals, and let me say, personally, I'm hopeful.
Well, thank you. I have to be a Solomon in this congregation, I think, to keep it together. But I understand, as director of the church music, Mr. Baton, you have some reservations about this proposal and have one of your own instead. Could you describe that?
Well, you can obviously see that the last 2 years have given me a fair amount of wrinkles in my brow. because I have had to straddle so many different gaps in a church community. I do not agree with what the worship committee has come up with. And again, I would appeal to a heritage, but not precisely in the sense of Pastor Singer. We have a tradition as Lutherans, but it is a living tradition. We sing music of the 16th, 17th, 18th century, but we sing it now. We sing it in our present situations, and it forms us in our present lives. We are not living in the past, we're living here and now. Similarly, newly composed music that we call contemporary, in many ways, has a deep tradition in individual congregations. Now the feast has been going out for some 10 years, and as far as many of our church members are concerned, it might as well have been started by Jesus Christ himself. as much as deeply as it has become rooted into their systems, into their ways of thinking and understanding themselves as Christians. So for myself, the entire debate between a traditional and a contemporary service completely misses the mark. As I understand Luther, he was very, his spirituality was very deeply grounded, not only in music, but in things sonic. He said he could hear the word of God in birdsong as much as he could hear it in the choirs at church. God to him came through the ears. The word, the fact that the word was made flesh in the book of John is no small matter for Luther. For him, that is how we apprehend the entirety of God. And so when I look at our church situation, when I look at who we are as a community, it is very plain to me that we are formed deeply by everything that we hear, our preaching and our singing, all kinds of singing, all kinds of music. Not merely, you know, a particular style or a particular genre, Certainly, we resonate more deeply with certain kinds of music based on our experiences. But the Word of God is not a static word. It comforts us, it challenges as well as it comforts. And thus, in order to meet one another in Christian community, we need to meet one another musically with our respective styles, with our respective traditions, and to come together and to share them together. To divide this up, to say, we'll meet your needs here, and your needs here, and your needs here, and your needs here, is, you know, as I said, a consumerist ploy, and it's a sign of the nation that we live in, the country that we live in, that we can get what we want rather than what we need. I would propose a single service in which we had all of the music at once in one place where we could share across these gaps of experience and come to know each other more deeply in Christ through the music that we share. So that is my position.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you as well for providing us with an example of exactly what you had in mind with our musical vespers, where we heard everything from Purcell to Marty Halpin to Africa, I believe, and much more. So with everyone in this congregation listening in to the four positions and applauding each one of them, I think that people here maybe are confused. They like what they do. So I don't know how they're going to help here save Johann Sebastian. They seem to applaud what's ever been most recently said. So let's hear now from some of you as to what should happen seriously at Johann Sebastian here to keep it from falling apart. Yes.
Maybe we clap for each of the four because presentation is so important, maybe even more important than substance or content. And so maybe that's what we're looking for in our music too, is stuff that moves us and is done well. And you know, maybe the tune is more important than the words or where it comes from or something. I mean, if you look at We Are Marching in the Light of God, there's not a whole lot, you know, that's deep about the lyrics of that song, and yet it really moved us. And so I don't know, and the presentation, the accompaniment, the whole thing was really well done.
So am I understanding you to say that in a way we would do well to focus upon excellence or quality rather than style? That is to say that every style has its own excellences.
Mm-hmm.
And that if we could agree that even though there are different preferences for styles, there could be a common accord to move toward higher levels of excellence in the way in which the singing is done and the instrumentation and so forth, that might be a way to cut across these distinctions.
Yeah, partly that, and then also was wondering with what Pastor Singer was saying. He talked about moving up to a higher level, too, mm-hmm. and was wondering, what is that qualitatively? How do you distinguish what is good music? And how do you make those decisions in a congregation?
Okay, let's leave that question just hanging there. We'll let Pastor Singer address it later, but let's hear just from some other folks first. Yes.
I think it's interesting when we talk about tradition that every song in our tradition was contemporary at one point. Mm-hmm. Martin Luther did set out the entire LBW and nothing has changed. I was looking at the LBW at the bottom of each page of the songs we were singing, and there's songs from the 1600s, 17s, 18, 1900s. And I don't know why the additions to our Lutheran tradition have to stop in the 20th century. That doesn't seem reasonable that every other century's music is okay, but we discount our own. So I think what we are nervous about is contemporary music will someday be part of our tradition as well, and it will feel as old and as valuable as A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, which was a nice drinking song, which is also part of our Lutheran tradition that we conveniently forget.
Thank you. What would you make of, would you welcome as consistent with your own observation, Michael's proposal there, that that regardless of what style it is, including contemporary, that there be a kind of commitment to a certain level of excellence in performance?
Oh, absolutely.
And in tone.
I think so. I think style, again, is very important in the quality of the singers, the quality of the writing, the quality of the musicians, and the types of instruments that you use to accompany. I do believe that excellence is something that should be strived for.
Any other folks want to get in now before we hear again from some
I did come here many years ago, and now, you know, everything is changing, and where can I go to where I don't hear this boom Sunday morning and I can meditate and pause on the, you know, the traditions are so important. I just think that we shouldn't let them go. This is what I've heard in our church.
Those exact words.
Uh-huh.
But with real tears.
Yeah. I mean, they feel older people. I mean, and I feel myself that tradition, we're losing something in our society, in the community, and whatever. Traditions, that's where your roots are and who you basically are. And if we lose some of those traditions, we're just fly-by-night people.
Now, would you, Ion, welcome the proposal
that Mr. Beal had,
where the place to go for singing in Swedish or Norwegian is the 8:30 service? And
see, we do that at our church.
That's your solution?
That's what they finally came up with. They came up with a morning service at 8:15 and then the temporary service, or the regular service at 10:30. But then you think contemporary is only temporary. God's word is forever. And temporary things are, you know, they come and go, fly by.
Yes, Mel?
I'd like to ask a question of the body. The menu, which some decry, but is used by many Lutheran churches, has been used with some success. I have not heard of any that have, with real success, been able to use blended all the time in a traditional, formerly traditional congregational setting. I was just wondering if anyone present can speak of experience like that. Yes, thanks.
At our church, we really do. We use a blended, you know, there have been a certain number of people in our congregation who said, we want contemporary, but we haven't gone to two separate services. One of the reasons being nobody knows which service should be which, you know. But the other thing is I think our pastor's done a great job of leading the congregation into accepting a little bit of everything at each service. And so we do sing a variety of things, although we still get complaints. About a year ago, there was a service where we just mostly sang contemporary stuff, and the worship committee got a letter. It was just went on and on and on about how they were singing these campfire songs at church, and it's just horrible, you know. But basically, I think we do blend it pretty well. Do you blend it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Does your church use amplified instrumentation?
We use a variety of music, but we use guitars, pianos, flutes.
So it wouldn't sound like if you turned on a contemporary rock station ever? No.
Okay. Let me jump in here. At my home congregation, which is an atypical Lutheran congregation in that we do have Baptists, Methodists, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, Roman Catholics.
Is that hairy out there?
We have gleaned a rich mixture from all these traditions, and one of our members has composed a liturgy that we use. It's a liturgy that is as contemporary and yet as deep as Now the Feast. We also use Now the Feast, and we also use the LBW, and we do it, as Eric said, on a rotating basis. On one Sunday we have LBW, the next Sunday we'll have Now the Feast, and the next Sunday we'll have this other liturgy, and we also at times will use the South African Freedom Liturgy. And it works, because people will not generally skip a Sunday just because it's LBW, or just because it's Haugen, or just because it's this other liturgy. And so it works. And it also allows people, or encourages, I think, a little bit more mixing of services. If people normally come to the 8:30, and geez, they've been out late, well, you know, it's the same service at 11. So it works. It works at our congregation. But I say that ours is an atypical Lutheran congregation.
It's a justice.
My congregation does the same, and it does something additional as well. If we use LBW service, we do the choir does a more contemporary hymn, and if it's we do hymnal supplement or Whitland voice, then the choir does a more traditional hymn. So it is, that's how the music is blended in that service.
I would also say, though, that at our congregation, there isn't the commitment to a choir. In other words, you won't get the same group of 25 people out for, you know, a long period of time, a full year, every Sunday. And I would throw that out as, you know, is that something that happens in other congregations, or is that only typical of our congregation? I don't know what happens with yours.
I could speculate that that's our contemporary culture again. In every volunteer position in the church, it's becoming harder and harder to find long-term commitments.
That was
6 and 8 week type commitments are much easier to find than for a program year, and I think it's happening to choirs, it's happening for Sunday school teachers, it's happening for committees of all kinds.
That was my suspicion too. Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm a Catholic, but I want to address that very last point, because I belong to a small Catholic community that has that is under the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, but they don't provide our pastors, so we advertise in the National Catholic Reporter to find our pastor, and we're very happy with the results of that. But what our music director has done is that the last Sunday of the month, we have another group who comes in and functions as the choir and provides the music. So that gives the choir one Sunday a month off. And I think that is a way that some churches might explore using a choir and yet not having to be there every Sunday.
Our congregation rotates. We'll have a choir for maybe 2 weeks, then we have a solo the next week, you know, and so it.
Which of the several models that's been proposed for how to handle a liturgical setting and so forth does your congregation use? I mean, people have mentioned having one thing at 8:30, one thing at 10:45,
We are right now at 10:30, and it's a conventional or traditional mm-hmm. service. Working in, we have a young pastor, and he's been up here older than we sneak in. Holding things, you know, holding songs, and we have one voice. We have a hard time with that. The vestry or the council didn't even want to
didn't even want to pay the bill. They didn't want to order it. And so we had someone in the congregation who personally bought those books mm-hmm. so that they could get into the pews, but they were fought from, and there's a lot of older members. We're a Norwegian church also, mm-hmm. and I have my share of frustrations with it also. And it's now being, we're looking into an 8:30 contemporary service because we are trying to get the young people involved, young families, and they're not relating to the traditional because they haven't come from that background. And I think, too, I wanted to add that our generation today thinks on a linear line. They don't dig down deep as to where their roots are. They're just going straight ahead. They have nothing under them. And for many, they don't have anything above, such as an authority or even a God, and they just go straight. So when we say that tradition doesn't mean anything to this present generation, it's true, because it doesn't. I think someday maybe they will realize that there is a tradition, and hopefully grandma and grandpa and mom and dad aren't dead by the time they realize that there is some significance into their lives.
Well, this is Ione's worry, and I think Pastor Singer's worry, and I'm wondering whether or not what Harry suggests here, which coincides a bit with one of Eric's proposals, where one would have different Sundays mm-hmm. where all the services follow a certain liturgical tradition, along with the speaker up there, where there's a kind of contrapuntal relationship between what the choir would sing on a different Sunday and the kind of liturgy that's being used, which does initiate people into a tradition, but not in a monolithic way. In other words, it isn't as though the tradition becomes so completely all-encompassing that people have no way of refreshing and renewing it and having an alternative, but it's arranged in such a way so that everybody must be initiated into it. You can't just decide, well, yeah, I'm going to go to 10:45 all the time and I will never become initiated. Yes, Dorothy.
Now, this tradition, though, as Pastor Singer represented it, we need to think about this a little bit, because it takes a lot of training to participate fully in the tradition as Pastor Singer described it, and therefore even to do well the occasional times that this tradition might become part of a more inclusive or eclectic service. You can't just decide to throw in some Bach this week. I mean, you have to have people who play different instruments. You have to have people who read music. This is a skill that is dying in our larger
sing
culture.
Tune.
Sing and tune. We have 12-year-olds, and I've loved watching them struggle with those big words in the LBW. They have to pay more attention doing that, and they're going to learn more doing that, you know, just in terms of sheer cultural literacy than going to school, you know? And, so where is some energy? You can't just kind of throw this into the mix. If there's going to be even this as part of the mix, which is basically what I would favor, I guess, it's going to take a lot of work and training and formation over the years. I mean, you don't just sit down at the piano and start playing Marching in Life, God, in that way, without lots of years of piano lessons, you know? And that's the part that is potentially, if we just try to suit the consumers, that formation for good music of any sort is in peril.
Thank you. This gets a little back to the question that I said we were going to leave hanging there that was raised by Michael about what is excellent and what is quality. And I think, Pastor Singer, why don't you give us some sense of exactly how that kind of formation into a musical tradition and into a level of excellence, what does a congregation need to do and commit itself to do that well?
Well, if I can back away from my role for a moment and pretend to stand for just a moment. I'm not a church musician. I conduct college choirs. And it happens that, I set a real high standard for my college choirs. I want them to do great repertoire, and I want them to do it very well. It happens that almost all great choral repertoire was written for Christian worship. that's another one of those accidents of history, because it's the Christian church since the time of the early Roman church, which has paid for it, which has fostered the composers, which has provided the buildings in which the music is heard, which has paid for the choirs, which has done all that stuff. So what it happens is, if you want to do a really good college choir, you're doing music which was written for the worship service. Fact is, most church choirs can't perform this music anymore. There is a tremendous change since Brahms, for instance, was writing his motets. When Brahms wrote those motets, they got performed by Lutheran choirs, because there were Lutheran choirs in Germany that were capable of performing them. Now the only groups that can perform those motets are either top-level college choirs or professional choral organizations, or, you know, very special community choirs up in the upper Midwest, who are made up of graduates of St. Olaf and Lutheran, Concordia and Gustavus and so forth. I mean, you know what I mean. The church choirs don't do them anymore. They don't have the level. They don't have the skill anymore. As I say, I'm not speaking as Pastor Singer now. I'm speaking as a college music teacher. It happens that more and more, if we want to do contemporary music in a college choir that is written now, and we want it to be high level, you know, complex, thought out, all of that, it will be written by somebody who just happens to choose a sacred text, but is not connected with the church in any way. It's not being written for worship anymore, because music contemporaneously being written for worship is not really worth being done by college choirs. It's too simple. That's just the way it is. You know, you hear a college choir putting all of its energy into what is now being done by church choirs, and you say, why is this incredible instrument being used for this? Mm-hmm. You know, they can read through it in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. What's the point? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know that I'm talking about quality as much as I'm talking about literacy. Mm-hmm. But, have I seen some hands?
So. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You were first.
I was just going to say that my brother lives in Marin, California, where he sings in a choir that is just a choir of people. He does not go to church.
Right.
And they sing and perform all year, and they go to Germany in the summer and perform with choirs in Germany, and they do Bach and everybody.
Right.
So that is a, you know, I mean, that's not a church thing. That is just a very excellent choir. Mm-hmm. So it's not all in the Midwest by any means.
I was being a little bit Pastor Singer here.
Oh, I see.
Audrey?
I think I'll tell you that I belong to a parish of about 750 people. And we have a director of church music. And every fall, those that he knows can sing or would enjoy singing. I don't know how he picks them, but he sends them individual letters. And it's like a call from God. When you get one of these letters and you feel like saying, here am I, Lord, because it's such a strong spiritual call. And then the choir goes on Labor Day weekend retreat for 2 nights. And they really do feel it's a great spiritual gift that they're giving because of this retreat, and I think they hang in there all year. So I would just speak to how, and some of this people, other.
We've had people that sang in the choir years. There's some that really should not be singing it. But if you have anybody in a church choir, you can't refuse it.
But I know.
They keep coming every year. Just remarkable.
Mark?
I think the main difficulty that I've seen, and I think I mentioned this to Bruce too, in church music is mainly that we still think of church. I think as a culture we're having a very difficult time getting away from the concept of the church as not being a state church. All of our deepest traditions, many of them anyway, come from a time when the church was, you know, a legitimate social structure in a nation. When musicians were the servants of, they were civil servants. They were paid by the government to conduct music in the church, as was, I think, many choirs too.
Oh yeah.
And so.
And we're only talking about Lutherans here.
Yeah.
Some of the Episcopalians and so forth have an entirely different answer to these problems we're having. <Yeah. laughs>
But I think the same is true too of the Catholics. There's been, the choral tradition of the Catholic Church. Is one where they've been fiscally supported and economically supported by huge cultural or social bodies. And we in America, where church and state are two separate entities, find ourselves rather underfunded and thus find it rather difficult to get the professional musical people that we need to do quality stuff. So I think for churches in America, particularly the Lutheran Church in America, the focus has to shift from a vision of quality as an artistic excellence to one of quality as communal excellence, of music in which the people that are participating are being formed and shaped in their faith. They're being more deeply drawn into a way of life that is Christian. May or may not, reflect itself in artistic excellence. The central thing for our churches is that rooting in the Christian life here in America, I think.
I see a couple of their hands up, but I wanted to just, we have about 5 minutes, and I wanted to touch base with Jane Doleful here, because the point was to see if we could help to save Johann Sebastian here. And I'm wondering if you'd like to put any more questions to the group that might be helpful to the situation that you face, things that you haven't heard that you'd like to draw any individual out on or the rest of us out on, or are you satisfied with the way things are going?
Let me just think a minute, and I'll see if something comes in my head in the next 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay,
I'll let you know.
Good. No.
Well, my comment was going to be very similar to Mark's, because if, as Bruce suggests, where our contemporary American culture is, that both the resources and the skills for this kind of literature are diminished, why are we arguing so hard to keep that the standard for our church when it's to be the voice of the people that are raised in worship? And so I think we have to, as Mark just suggested, come up with a new way of raising the voice of the people.
I'd like to respond as a Lutheran,
yeah,
who happens to be a trained musician, to
yeah,
that I, when I first started singing for money, or got good enough to sing for money, I sang in lots of Episcopal churches, Presbyterian Church, a Holy Name Cathedral, stuff like that, because the Lutherans
didn't pay.
They don't pay, but also in a major city, the Lutheran choirs, because Lutheran churches don't pay, the Lutheran choirs aren't very good. The good choirs in New York, Chicago, Washington, Baltimore, and so forth, are the other denominations who just consider it their responsibility to have a budget to pay professional singers to be in their choirs. There's a church in New York that, it slips me my mind what the name of it is, a friend of mine, it's a Lutheran church, and they had a Bach series, and they paid their singers very, very well, and their instrumentalists, and they got a new pastor who said, this isn't Lutheran. This is not part of the Lutheran tradition. We want to build community here, not put on concerts for the public on Sunday afternoons. And he discontinued the series and cut the money out of the music program. So they no longer do Bach cantatas on Sunday. So who does the Bach cantatas now? Well, the Episcopalians are doing them. And I don't mean just, you know, we get caught up into talking about 18th century music. I mean, there's lots of 20th century music that takes good forces to do too that we don't do. I went around on this for several years, singing for everybody else, and really missing being a Lutheran. I really missed it. So I came home to being a Lutheran, and then stopped doing church music. And just go to the Lutheran church and do my music on the other 6 days of the week. And that doesn't feel quite right to me, because so much of the music I do was actually written by Lutherans in a different world.
I would like to address a question to Pastor Singer. Put on your hat. You mentioned that one of the advantages of following a traditional worship service is that no matter where you go, you can slip in the pew and you can pick up the hymnal and you can join in. This reminds me a lot of how about going to Holiday Inn. On every holiday inn you go to on your trip, all looks alike. You walk in the door and you don't know what town you're in because everything looks alike. The rooms are alike. They're laid out the same and everything. And I wonder what validity there is to that comment that you feel at home slipping into this book.
Well, I suspect that Pastor Singer would think that some of those people aren't very Lutheran. I suspect that is what he would think. Yeah. He probably goes to the national conventions and conventions and hears these groups that are gospel choirs on the south side of Chicago, and he says, is that Lutheran? Is that really Lutheran? I don't know. Is that what Pastor Jane Doleful, is that what Pastor Singer would say?
I don't know. He might enjoy a gospel choir, but
as a performance.
Mm-hmm.
As entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. But that's what a lot of Bach becomes,
Yes.
Okay. I agree with the tradition and honoring that and enjoying it and loving it. I mean, because I do, you know. I love to hear Concordia's choir sing, it is beautiful. But I don't want to lose sight of the fact that music is there for a reason, and that is to worship and to fill yourself with the Spirit. I mean, and I can sing something from LBW and have it happen, or I can sing, we sang tonight, which Yugoslavka wrote, The Burning Cry. I mean, that just fills me with something, with the Spirit. And I think no matter what we choose to sing, it should be something that works for those people in that church to help them worship.